to 11. I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. Matthew 11, verse 28 to 30. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light.
Thanks so much, Ruby. And yeah, we can take a seat. I want to start off this morning with some good news. I've got my phone that I've recorded on so I don't get anything wrong. Many of us will know Martha, and the really good news is that she gave birth to a beautiful baby girl, Ruth, this week, which is really exciting. I'm very thankful to God for that. And then I heard a story this morning where three of her kids come to church, and they love kids' church so much that they said this morning, well, why can't we go to church? What's stopping us? And so they got a lift from Andy, which she brought them to church, which is just a real testament both to Andy and our kids' church, the people who put their lives into those kids. And some of them are out here and some of them are in here as well. So I just want to say thank you so much for everything. Yeah, let's give them a round of applause. It's some great news to start off this morning. But this morning we're talking about a big question we all have in our life. But I thought I'd try and explain something that I think we all feel just innately, because being stuck in the middle is a very uncomfortable and very familiar experience, isn't it? Being put on hold in traffic, waiting in line, being stuck in the middle is a very familiar and uncomfortable experience. We're constantly waiting for something else to happen. And if we feel like we're taking too long, we start to feel stuck. I think that's what makes it kind of universal. I was at our Kingdom Youth Group a couple of weeks back, and we started playing Piggy in the Middle. And I found myself in the middle, surrounded by some very able teens. And I started, why would anyone think this is a game worth playing? This sucks. I hate this. But I think our discomfort starts a little bit earlier than Piggy in the Middle, because as a dad, I find myself at playgrounds a fair bit. And I've noticed that younger kids often will find themselves stuck on playgrounds. And especially I've noticed there are rope bridges, so it's not a complete bridge, there are just steps along the way. And with nothing below them but their ground, they reach out with all the confidence in the world, right? And then, but if they've got more confidence than their legs are long, they find themselves stuck and they don't have enough power to lift either leg to either go back or to go forwards. And they kind of find themselves doing the splits a little bit and need to be rescued. Being stuck in the middle is a very familiar, very uncomfortable experience, isn't it? As Steve said, this November, we're asking the same questions in church that our Alpha community is asking on a Sunday afternoon. And if you're here with us because of Alpha, whether you came to the launch party last week or you're interested in what it is, more than welcome. It's great to have you. And it's not too late to become part of Alpha. This afternoon at 2 p.m., right here, is the perfect time to ask the important questions of life and find community along the way. And if Alpha is something you want to hear more about, I'll be by the coffee machine after the service. I can introduce you to some of our Alpha people. They're good people. They're great people. The coffee's great as well, and it's free. If you're interested in finding out about Alpha, it's a little caveat there. But the question we're asking this morning is there more to life than this? And the reason I said that being stuck in the middle is uncomfortable is because to ask the question, is there more to life than this, demands a little bit of discomfort from us, doesn't it? It implies we're not where we should be. And it also implies that if we want to say no to is there more to life than this, it implies that we've got it all figured out. The question implies we're stuck in the middle. A very familiar, a very uncomfortable experience. And this is the experience of our first reading from the Bible this morning that Ruby did so well. Can we get the slide up on the screen of Ecclesiastes? Ecclesiastes is a book of ancient wisdom. And the writer of Ecclesiastes can't get over how uncomfortable being stuck in the middle is. We read it. I've seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He's made everything beautiful in its time. He's also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. The writer's saying, on one hand, there's a beauty to the timeliness of everything, isn't there? It's like the camellias flowering in the dead of winter or an ice cream cone in the height of summer. Even our own lives are marked by a beginning and an end, our birth and our death. Yet on the other hand, we experience eternity in our lives. Through truth, through beauty, through goodness, we experience an eternal beauty through the colours of the camellias as they bloom. We experience eternal goodness with the friend that we share this ice cream cone with. That's the eternity that's in our hearts and available to us. But as the writer says, the familiar, uncomfortable reality is that we can't make sense of it from beginning to end. That often trying to grab hold of any more in our lives is like trying to hang on to a cloud. In one sense, we are like that child on a playground, aren't we? We're straddled between the here and now and eternity. And so the problem that our writer, and I think we have today, is not that there isn't more to life. I think if you ask most people, they would say there's something more, however you want to define that. It's not that there isn't more to life. I think we're all aware of this discomfort that's being described. The problem is, why won't anyone tell me what more actually is? And why can't I take hold of it? So what is more to life? Is there an answer? Well, I'm a musician, and I think the first gig that I played was when I was about 14. It was a fringe show. It was upstairs at the Exeter Hotel on Rundle Street. I seem to remember being smuggled in because I was only 14. Thanks, Tom, my older brother. As I got older, I've had the privilege of meeting some really incredible creative people who've had the drive and the opportunity to live overseas and continue their work. I have the privilege of knowing violinists in Switzerland, painters in Berlin, artists, musicians and comedians in America. And when I talk to them, one thing that always makes it back is the way that different cultures relate to our big question this morning. The question of, is there more to life than this? And how different cultures go about getting it. So I want to make a bit of a comparison. I think the Americans are very different to us, right? We see it on our screens, don't we? We see a lot on our screens, but we see it on our screens. The culture that we receive from America is of living a great life. The more to life is greatness. You know, Hollywood, Michael Jordan, Wall Street and SpaceX, you know, reaching out for the eternal through legacy, through impact and celebrity. That, at least that's what comes to us through our screens. But us Aussies, I maybe want to suggest that we're a little more conservative. We're happy with a good life. Forget legacy and celebrity. We're happy with holidays to, I don't know, Bonnie Doon or something like that. We love our public health care and more public holidays than you can poke a stick at. If we're the kid at the playground, straddled between the here and now and things that are eternal, we're definitely camping out on that first rung. And I think maybe we're so concerned with the here and the now, because maybe having an eye on eternal things, things that last, is arrogant. Maybe we feel that as a culture. How dare you kind of talk for God? After all, no one can know what God's done from beginning to end. We've heard that in our reading this morning. But I reckon we're selling ourselves short. Let's not sell ourselves short as a culture this morning. There's lots of good things about being in Australia. Our good life, it leads us to eternal truth, beauty, and goodness. Like the goodness of an ice cream cone with a friend, holidays to the bush, it's an immersion to a beautiful created world. Healthcare, it's the truth that everyone should be treated equally, no matter what their position in life. Public holidays, we almost weaponize them, don't we? We see if I get a couple of days off here, how many days in a row can I get off to spend time with family and friends? We see the relationships that we're a part of being eternally good. But the good life for us comes at a cost. We work incredibly hard to be this laid back, don't we? Instead of working hard for legacy and impact like Americans, we work hard to live easy lives. Which I think is such a lie of our culture that, you know, I don't know, whatever the Australian dream is, I've got one version of it here, a house with a backyard and the right amount of family and easy weekends off are just around the corner as long as you work hard enough. See, our Australian more of this good life can't be grasped because the ends don't justify the means. You can't just work harder so then you relax. I think that can leave us feeling like work animals, driven by a force beyond ourselves, outside of your control. Jesus has words for us when we feel like that, who are stuck in a very familiar, very uncomfortable experience, who might feel helpless like a kid on a playground, or might feel captive like a work animal. He shows us clear as day that the more to life in our world isn't a what, but a who. And that's true in our examples. It's who we share beauty with, who truth applies to, and who is the good in our lives. As we get our next Bible reading up, Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke." Here Jesus paints a picture of him joining in with our familiar, uncomfortable experience. It's like we're two oxen with a yoke across us, working the soil. He says, "Take my yoke upon you, and come alongside me and learn from me. For I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Here Jesus is saying, if you're tired and burnt out from wanting more and not being able to grasp it, if you're tired from trying to hang on to clouds, don't waste your time. Find out if you can trust me. Come alongside me. And what Jesus offers and what Jesus promises is not just platitudes, but eternity. Here in a man, just like any other, is eternal beauty. Not in the right skincare or a perfectly manicured lawn, but Jesus is humble in heart and gentle. True beauty is now measured in the capacity for love. Here in a man, just like any other, is eternal goodness. When Jesus says, come alongside me, he's saying, I'm going to be there with you. I'm a true friend. Eternal goodness. He promises to be with us as we share his burden instead of suffering under ours. Maybe most importantly, and this isn't in the passage on the screen, but just before this, Jesus had said something we often leave out of this passage. So to set the scene, Jesus has been doing his public work, his public ministry, and he's been misunderstood by the very people who say they get him. He's going through Jewish towns and he's doing public ministry there, and these towns, they refuse to repent. That is, change their way of thinking and turn to Jesus. Being misunderstood by people who claim they know Jesus. That would never happen today, would it? And he has these words to say just before he says this. He says, no one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and to those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. It's a lot of sons and fathers, and trying to understand this might feel like trying to untangle a knot of fairy lights. But here Jesus is promising eternal truth, that he is truth, that Jesus is God. So one with God that he knows God as Father, and so one with God that he's actually able to live out God as God the Son. And this is the mystery, but the truth. And in this, he wants us to know that truth isn't bound to words. It exists now in humanity. It exists now in Jesus, who is one of us. And so as Jesus shows up in our lives, so truth shows up in our lives too. I think it proves that God isn't into hollow words. I think God dreams of us relating to these eternal things, like truth and beauty and goodness through flesh and blood. I think Jesus is the more to life. And the beautiful thing about this is that his promise to us is that we don't do it ourselves. And this is hard, but I think this is the implication of this passage. If we think that we're the ones to make the more in our lives, that means everything has to come through our own strength, our own smarts, our own ability. This morning you might be feeling like you need to be perfect to get the more out of life. And the flip side of that is when that doesn't work, you might feel so ashamed when you make mistakes that you feel like you need to hide. But Jesus offers rest from our own effort to make more out of our lives. Shows that we can trust him because he himself is the more to life. He's inviting us to know God like you would a friend. So perhaps to offer a really, really unsatisfying answer to is there more to life than this, we could ask ourselves, who could I trust to find out? Am I just going to trust myself? If you've been suffering under the burden of more in your life and you're tired of that, the invitation of Jesus is that you can trust him. I think the question that he's aching to hear from us is, Jesus, can I trust you enough for us to find out if there's more to life together? Alpha's really the perfect place to do that. If you have those questions for the next 6 weeks? Seven. Great. Next 7 weeks. With great food, with people who are asking their own questions, and also mature Christians who are going to hear you out, not rush to answer questions that you might have. But for those of us who are taking a nap at 2 p.m. today, Jesus' life is a reminder that to trust is not something you think, but something you live. So next time, for all of us, next time you find yourself in that familiar, uncomfortable experience of being stuck in the middle and wanting to do something about it, wanting to race ahead to the next thing, what part of that situation could you ask Jesus to shoulder? Your impatience? Maybe it's a situation that someone else has put you in, so you feel hard done by. Could you ask Jesus to shoulder the burden of feeling hard done by? Maybe it's your impatience about being hard done by. And I suspect, this is my hunch, as we ask Jesus to shoulder that burden, he's going to show up clearly. And he might actually be interested in doing more in our lives than we've actually initially asked for. Jesus has a word for you when you feel helpless, like a kid on a playground. He has a word for you when you feel captive to working and never resting just to get more, like an oxen plowing the paddock. He says, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." We're going to share in a communion meal now. It's a simple meal of bread and drink. But the meal is a remembrance of Jesus' death and a celebration of our new life trusting in him. And the meal shows us how Jesus carries our burden of more. It shows us also how we can trust him. Because in the bread, he gives his body to us. And in the cup, he sheds his blood. And he makes a promise that our sin, our trespassing against God, is forgiven. And it's a meal that everyone is invited to share in because Jesus is inviting everyone to trust in him. And we do that, like as an individual, we eat our portion. But also as a church, we eat the same thing as one another as we all trust in Jesus together. The table at this meal is a level playing field. So my encouragement would be, if you're here this morning and you want to find out what it feels like to trust in Jesus, this is a great way to do it. I encourage you to eat the bread and drink the cup. And as the meal's being distributed, if you want to find out what it feels like to trust in Jesus, I invite you to eat the bread in your own time, and then we're going to all drink the cup together. And as that's happening, this is how Matthew, which is the same account that we heard Jesus speak from earlier this morning, this is how Matthew tells the story of this meal. While they were eating, Jesus took the bread, and when he'd given thanks, he broke it and gave it to his disciples, saying, "Take and eat. This is my body." Then he took a cup, and when he'd given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. So the truth of the more in our lives has been revealed in flesh and blood. We eat the bread, his body given to us, and we trust in him. Drink this cup, which is his blood for the forgiveness of sins, and we confess our need for him. Would you pray with me? Holy God, we thank you for showing us the goodness of your world. Sorry when we treat it like our own and are uninterested in knowing you. Help us trust in you, God. You've proved that you're good and that we can. We need your Spirit to open our hearts, be willing to share your burden and not suffer under our own.